Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's high noon, another beautiful afternoon, and this one happens to be Saturday of a long weekend. And thanks so much for joining us on Nation Radio. We're here every Saturday between noon and 2, and we're at Nation Radio at theteam1260.com if you want to drop us a line. Also, we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. And we got a very busy show coming up. We're going to talk to Cam Moon, play-by-play guy for the Red Deer Rebels. We'll talk a little bit about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and also Brett Ferguson, who's been invited to the Oilers rookie camp. Very interesting prospect. Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun will join us at about 20 after 12, and we'll talk about the Jets, Dustin Byfuglien in a boat, and what he's been doing this summer. And we'll also try to trade for Zach Bogosian. We'll see how that goes. Julian from Pension Plan Puppets will join us just before the top of the hour. We'll talk about Wade Bielak and the concussion issues and depression issues and all of those things, although I don't want to get too deeply into it because I really do believe there's a lot of information we don't know about it, but mostly it'll be an opportunity to look back on a fine career of WHL player and Toronto Maple Leaf and various other NHL teams, Wade Bielak, and his very tragic passing this week. In hour number two, Corey Graham will join us, and we'll talk about Edmonton Oil Kings, how they look. Of course, a big tournament coming up in St. Albert starting tomorrow, the Oil Kings' fifth annual. Can you believe that? Fifth annual tournament. And be talking to him about, a few people, including Martin Gernat, who's looking very good. Oiler draft pick who was taken, in the 50th round. He looks like he's a player, and we'll talk to him about all of the Oil Kings and the WHL and how it looks this year. A new blog just in the last few weeks, Oil Drop. Rob Cirillo will join us about 20 after 1. We'll talk to Rob about his blog, where he comes from, his background, and what he's going to be telling us about throughout this winter. Of course, your emails are welcome. And we're hoping to get to a fascinating interview that's caused some waves at Oilers Nation and a few other blogs and spots around the internet and on radio. An interview with Robin Brownlee and I think it was Gene Principe. With regard to Jason Bonsignor and how he was treated by specifically Glenn Sather. And that interview, if we have time, we'll replay it. And I think it's a very fascinating look at the Edmonton Oilers, say, 17, 18 years ago, and how it might be a little bit different bringing in high-end talent and high-end draft picks nowadays, or maybe it's the same. We'll talk about that and hopefully get to that interview before 2 o'clock today. Busy week if you're an Oilers fan. I mentioned a few minutes ago, out at Service Place starting tomorrow, I think it's 6 WHL teams, Medicine Hat, Red Deer, Calgary, Swift Current, Prince George, Oil Kings, are all playing in round-robin fashion. It begins tomorrow morning. And if you get out to Service Center in St. Albert to see any of those games, should be very good. I'm not exactly certain of the rosters. Maybe we'll talk to Corey about that, but that's going to be a great event. And, of course, we're a week away from everything happening with the Oilers rookie camp out in Penticton. And that roster has been released. We'll talk about that throughout the afternoon as well. Some stories that impacted the Edmonton Oilers and the fan base this week. Flames GM Jay Feaster, I don't know if you heard this or not, but he doesn't see the Flames going with a rebuild similar to what the Oilers are doing. He was in a basically talking to the fan base of the Flames about what they're going to be looking forward to this year, and I think he's tiring of questions like, do the Flames plan on doing a complete rebuild like the Oilers? Because he said, and I want to quote this, I'm sorry, Edmonton finished where last year, caller? Want to wager on where we finish relative to Edmonton this year? I'm tired of this question. I'll tell you very honestly, I'm getting a little sour. How many times every year for the last 10 years, 5 years, 8 years, have they finished in the bottom 5, bottom 7, bottom 10? They've had to pick anywhere from number 1 to number 10 year after year after year after year after year, and they still wander in the desert, and they're no closer to getting out than they were 10 years ago. You know what? I look forward to the Battle of Alberta for the next X number of years. If the idea is burn it to the ground, then Ken can find another manager to do it. I think it's a beautiful quote. It really is. And if that does, I think it should help the Battle of Alberta, even if it's just in the stands. You know, interesting. And Jay Feaster is a guy who has done that a little bit before. So we'll have to monitor his quotes and his live hits because it looks like we've got a live one and somebody who's willing to stir the pot just a little bit. And I, for one, welcome. I think it's a great thing that he's a little bit on the outside of the average media quote. We talked about Ryan Whitney's injury last week, and there were more reports this this week, specifically Whitney talking about it and saying he was concerned. He'd had a little bit of a setback, another rut in the ice. I don't know where they're making ice nowadays, but it looks like it'll be fine, but it's something as we should monitor as we get closer to the real training camp, which is, what, a couple of weeks away now. And I read this morning online the study on that riot in Vancouver after Game 7 is in. Apparently too many drunk people and not enough police. So it was a real mystery, and now that one is solved. So, Connor, you haven't asked me yet about how I... Oh, he's on the phone right now. Sorry, buddy. I'm dressed in a suit, and I've been sitting here for 5 minutes now, Connor, and you haven't even asked me why I'm dressed.
You're looking
like
pretty dapper today.
Well, do you want... the reason I'm dressed like this is after the show, I'm going down to Palace Casino because Dustin Nielsen is involved. I'm thinking 2 hours he'll still be a live player in the Texas Hold'em tournament at Palace Casino, and he's there with... he had a Playboy model on yesterday. She's playing, a bunch of other celebrities, and it's a cash tournament, too, for a few listeners that we... who won an opportunity to play there. So I'm looking forward to it. I think Dusty can win this thing, right? Because he's got that blank face where there's really nothing going on. Anyway, I'll be down cheering for Dustin Nielsen, and I think that tournament gets underway. We'll follow him on Twitter and see exactly what's going on. It's 12:06, and we're joined now by Cam Moon from the Red Deer Rebels. And Cam, how are you this afternoon?
Oh, doing absolutely great. How about you?
Last time I talked to you, you were at a tournament, I believe, and it was a ball tournament, and working very hard. Are you through that and just relaxing before things kind of go crazy?
Yeah, it's already crazy. Yeah, the baseball ended last weekend, and Rebels training camp started last weekend, and they had their black and white game on Wednesday, and then the team will be in St. Albert tomorrow to start the Edmonton Oil King tournament. So, yeah, it's going full bore already.
What kind of roster I'm planning on going out because it's going to be a great tournament. What kind of roster can we expect when we get there? Obviously, there'll be a few players who aren't there, but we should have a look at some pretty good young hockey players.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of youth. There'll be a lot of rookies in the lineup. There won't be any of the players that are going to NHL camps will not be playing for Red Deer through this weekend. So anybody that's drafted or invited to a camp won't be playing. So it's going to be a lot of young guys. The team's first-round pick a few years ago, Cale Detzel, a 16-year-old defenseman from Saskatchewan, Rosetown, in fact. He'll be likely in the lineup. The team's first-round pick from this year, Connor Bleakley, from Southern Alberta, from High River, and he is also likely to be in the lineup. But there's some Edmonton guys that will be in there too. Mark McCoy, who played with the Southside Athletic Club, he's got a good shot at being in the lineup at some point this weekend. And Trace Elson, Turner Elson's younger brother. Turner has played for the Rebels the last two seasons. Trace played with the Maple Leaf Athletic Club last year. I mean, he's probably got a pretty good shot at being in the lineup, too. So, it's going to be a youthful lineup. I'm sure the teams that the Rebels are taking on are also going to be in that same type of mode, an opportunity for the coaching staff to evaluate the new players.
Let's talk a little bit about one of the Rebels that Oiler fans are very interested in, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. I'm reading some crazy stuff. I think everybody's kind of getting ahead of themselves a little bit. I read, I can't remember where, that a deal had been struck between the Oilers and the Red Deer Rebels that Nugent-Hopkins would play the first 9 games, then get sent out. It had been a prearranged deal. That kind of thing doesn't happen, right? He has an opportunity to earn a spot, but if not, he'll be back in Red Deer.
Yeah, that's right. There's nothing prearranged. It's the Oilers' call. He's now a signed player by the Edmonton Oilers, and they will ultimately dictate where he plays this season, whether it be in the National Hockey League or whether it be in the Western Hockey League. And that's what training camp and preseason and possibly the first 9 games of the regular season, that's what it's going to be. For the Oilers brass to figure out whether they want to keep him at that level or whether he's ready for that level this year or not. I mean, we can all speculate all day as to whether he is or isn't ready, but it will come down to what he does at training camp, preseason, and then probably at the start of the regular season. I would think he'll get an extremely long look. He should. First overall pick should get a very long look, and he's a very skilled player, and I wouldn't be shocked at all that the preseason over and Ryan's averaging a little better than a point a game. That wouldn't surprise me at all. So I guess it'll come down to what he does, but no, there's no prearranged deal.
No, and also it should be mentioned that Taylor Hall, who is a little more mature player, a little older by months than Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is now, he struggled. He played well in preseason, but he struggled in his first six or seven NHL games. And yeah, if you'd asked anybody after six games, it might have been a different story. Now he picked it up and obviously had a fine rookie year, but it's certainly up in the air. One of the things about Nugent-Hopkins we've read this summer is that he's put on some weight. And he's obviously, working very hard. At the beginning of the summer, you and I talked about his agility and his tremendous ability to make people miss. He's just one of those guys who can move into a situation or move his body so he can avoid contact. Do you think that kind of weight gain, like 10, 12 pounds over a summer, will impact that, or do you think he's going to be able to just continue it?
No, I think he'll be just fine. 10 pounds, I mean, he's worked really hard at gaining weight and working on the ice and working on quickness and all these things. Part of that is just the maturation of the player, of the person. I mean, he's likely to put on some weight at this age anyway, and he's made sure that it's good weight. But I don't think that's going to be an issue. It still puts him at what, 175 pounds or whatever, probably a little under 180. By no means does that make him a heavy player, so I don't think that that's going to have an impact at all on his quickness, his ability to make guys miss. Certainly not going to impact his anticipation of the play, which I think is one of his greatest assets. So I only see that as a positive for him being a little stronger on the puck and ability to push guys off of it, which, you know, for his size, he's very good at doing. It's amazing, really. So I think all of these are positives right now.
This is Nation Radio. We're in conversation with Cam Moon, and we're going to get into the Rebels and the WHL in just a minute. But one final question, a Rebel-related with regard to the Oilers. They invited Brett Ferguson to the rookie camp. Interesting player, and what can fans expect from him?
Well, Brett's first of all, a great person. An outstanding character. Came into Red Deer as an 18-year-old, played 18, 19, and 20 with the team after playing as AAA midget in Saskatchewan, and really developed over those 3 years. We saw a young man make great leaps and strides, not only in his game, but as a person off the ice. He was extremely committed to community work away from the rink, which he was the first guy to step up and say, yeah, I'll do it, whatever it was. And he went out of his way. He did stuff on his own, like stuff that didn't even really go through the Rebels' office. I mean, he was unbelievable. He turned into a real solid defensive forward with the team, although still was able to get his points. But his main asset was being really good on the penalty kill. He was extremely responsible in his own end, but had some touch around the opposition net, which developed over time, and worked really hard. A guy that was one of those first guys on the ice and the last guys off the ice, and a real character guy. So I think it's great that he was able to get an invite to an NHL training camp. The fact that it's the Oilers, even better, because he's really good friends with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. So, I mean, that will be a comfort situation for both players. And great to see that, because it's really one of the fun things about the Western Hockey League is seeing guys come in as rookies and where they end up when they leave, and seeing the way Brett Ferguson improved on and off the ice over three seasons was amazing. And I don't know if going to the Oiler camp is going to parlay itself into a contract or not, but if it doesn't, fine. He's able to get that NHL training camp experience, and I know he's got education money that he's banked up by playing in the Western Hockey League, and he can take advantage of that. And I know the University of Alberta would love to have him, and I think that's a real good route for the young man if that's the way it goes. So either way, I think Brett Ferguson comes out a winner.
Now, you last year, I think it was in maybe October, November, you called your 1,000th game?
Yeah, it was early last season.
That's a remarkable milestone, and I know in the Western Hockey League where Bob Ridley's been, you know, doing since 1972, I don't know what it is on the all-time list, but that's a remarkable amount of hockey, and you've seen some outstanding players run through Red Deer.
Yeah, I've been really lucky to get a job in the Western Hockey League. Lucky to stay and really lucky to be in a place like Red Deer that I absolutely love and see some great players. And I can go on and on, but Cam Ward from Sherwood Park was unbelievable goaltender here for 3 years and then, you know, moves on to the Carolina Hurricanes. And that guy was just, you know, when he was in goal, it didn't matter if the team struggled offensively. You always knew you had a chance to win the game. Jim Vandermeer, who's from Caroline, Alberta, that guy just struck the fear of God into some people the way he would play. And by his 20-year-old year, rarely got in a tilt because there weren't many that wanted to go with him. And that year, I mean, he hardly had any fights. It just wasn't part of his game by that point because there were no takers. But was a good defenseman and a real character. The whole family's a real character. He's got five other brothers that have all played minor pro hockey. And Brandon Sutter, who came in here, was a real strong player and a real good guy. We're able to see him. He's around here in the summer, so we see him quite a bit. But he was a treat to have here, and now with the Carolina Hurricanes. Colby Armstrong with the Toronto Maple Leafs. That guy was so funny. He still is. I don't know if anybody follows him on Twitter. I mean, he's got some good stuff. Obviously, if you saw him on TSN in the playoffs, I mean, there's a real sense of humor with that young man, and we really enjoyed having him here. But and you know what? There's a lot of guys that have come through, and then you see go on to Canadian university hockey, and then eventually you see them after they graduate and get into whatever field that they chose. We had a big reunion here this summer for the Memorial Cup team because it had been 10 years. Plus, we had other alumni involved with some golfing, and we had a hockey game, and we also had a lot of fun. So it was nice to see a lot of those guys. It's at that point where you realize, you know, you're getting old. They've been here a long time. And, I mean, these guys, some of the guys that have been gone for 10 years, and they're like, oh, yeah, you're still here too. I got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
But it's unbelievable. I think it's one of the greatest leagues. I love the league. I love the places you get to go. I love the differences of going to, you know, small town Moose Jaw and big city Vancouver and playing in the big boy rinks like Edmonton and Calgary and Vancouver, but playing in some smaller ones too, where the atmosphere in Medicine Hat. I mean, you take a Saturday night game when Red Deer's in Medicine Hat, and they don't like Red Deer much. I mean, it's a pretty good atmosphere.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun to be involved in. Or if Medicine Hat's in Red Deer on a Saturday night, I mean, that's pretty good too. I really enjoy it. I hope I can go another 1,000.
Now, this is the first year that, speaking of buildings, that Medicine, the hardest thing in Medicine Hat is to get a darn ticket.
Yeah.
But the Moose Jaw, the that rink is done now, right?
Like, yes.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You must have loved calling games there.
Nope. Yeah. No, I didn't, actually. I can't wait to see the new one. The old one certainly had its charms. Because it was, I want to say it was built in the 50s.
Yeah.
And it's built into the ground, and it's got the goofy saddle dome type roof. Of course, you know, it gets pretty low by center ice there. I'd been in that, and I'd seen the Western League final in there when they played the Vancouver Giants. I want to say that was 06. And I mean, it was absolutely crazy in there. You couldn't hear yourself talk. And they're going to lose some of that going to the new rink, but it'll be nice that they'll be in a new facility. It'll be downtown. I mean, the other one's kind of on the edge. Not that it's very far from downtown to the edge, but
yeah.
It's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's right in the middle of town, which probably helps all the downtown businesses. But I just look forward to that. Moose Jaw's a nice little place.
It is.
The people are very friendly.
And there's lots to do underground, too.
Yes, there is.
So, quickly, before we let you go here, I know it's too early to really handicap the entire Western Hockey League, but really quickly, what do you think, what do you see for the Oil Kings, the Rebels, and, say, the Hitmen this year as we move forward into the season?
I'll start with the Oil Kings. I think they've got a tremendous club. They've got all the key elements are coming back for them this year from last year's team. Last year's team able to make the playoffs. They got that experience of the first round with the Red Deer Rebels. And I think they'll make that next step. I see the Edmonton Oil Kings as a top four team in the Eastern Conference. So I see them with home ice in the first round. For Calgary, I mean, they were dead last in the division last year. I think they'll be better, but I don't think it's going to be a quantum leap. I think they'll be slightly improved. Making the playoffs might be a little bit of a large goal. I don't know if they're going to get there. Red Deer, there's some big question marks. This team could be really, really good. And the big question mark is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Is he coming back or not? And we're not going to know that until probably November. If he comes back, and if the goaltending is good, Darcy Kemper moves on to the Minnesota Wild organization. And he had 13 shutouts last year and put up all sorts of team records. It was amazing. I mean, he moves on. So that's obviously a big piece of the puzzle. The Rebels have brought in an import goaltender, Patrick Bartoszak, who's an 18-year-old from the Czech Republic. They got Dawson Gooley, a 19-year-old from Daysland, Alberta. And Bolton Pouliot, 17-year-old from Calgary, with the team right now. There's also a 15-year-old goaltender with the team right now, Granton Herniak, but he can't play for the club this year full-time. So among those three, is there going to be a guy that can carry the mail and be the guy? That remains to be seen. So if the goaltending's good and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is back, I see the Red Deer Rebels battling for a top spot in the Central Division, probably battling with the Edmonton Oil Kings. If not, well, it's going to be a little bit tougher. But there's a lot of depth on the blue line with the Red Deer Rebels, not the least of which being Alex Petrovic, an Edmonton guy, a second-round pick of the Florida Panthers. Aaron Barreco's an Edmonton guy, and he's a 20-year-old fourth year in the Western Hockey League. There's a lot of depth back there, and Justin Weller, who's from Daysland also, and a Phoenix Coyote draft pick. So I think the blue line's going to be a real pillar of strength.
Beautiful. Cam, do you Twitter? Are you on Twitter?
Well, but there's two of us that kind of do the Red Deer Rebels one.
Okay.
But I don't have a personal one. Nobody needs to know what I think.
What about blogs, anything like that? Where can we read you?
No, those scare me. Like, I don't trust me.
Well, good. That's probably wise.
That's why, yeah, because I could start Twittering at 2 in the morning. I mean, nothing good comes of that. Nothing.
Or then driving.
On, like, the front page of a paper. I try to avoid controversy now.
Cam, thanks so much.
Okay, thanks for having me on.
All right, Cam Moon, we talked a lot about, several things. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Brett Ferguson, who's an invite to the Oilers rookie camp. You know what? He talked about the Red Deer Rebels and the great players, including Cam Ward, who killed us in 06 and played well before that as a Reb. And handicapped the year for the WHL Alberta teams, or at least the ones we had time to discuss. And Oil Kings, man, they've got some positive arrows. So we thank Cam, and we're up next with Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
And a reminder for you, you can email us anytime at nationradio, team1260.com. Plus, we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. 1227 now, joining us from the Winnipeg Sun, Ted Wyman. Ted, how are you this afternoon?
Oh, doing great. How are you doing?
Very well. Let's talk. There's lots going on. Actually, the last, say, 3 days or so. Let's start with Dustin Byfuglien's story. Any word from the organization on the boating incident and the reported weight or anything like that? Or are they mum on the issue?
Oh, absolutely nothing coming out of the organization on that. They did say they were aware of what happened and they were looking into the situation and trying to gather all the facts. That was the best we got out of them. In fact, when I tried to ask a player about it the day after, he wasn't even aware. I was talking to Chris Mason. He wasn't even aware that it had happened. And the PR staff sort of stepped in and said, well, he's not going to comment on that until we've briefed the players. So really, they're trying to keep it as tight as possible. And I think that you know, that's probably the best news for Mr. Bufflin, because unfortunately for him, and before he's even really moved to Winnipeg, his picture, his mugshot's already been on the front page of all the local newspapers and on the local news.
And aside from the boating incident, there's also the weight issue. It sounds like he adopted my summer routine. is that because I know back in the old days, I remember reading Jerry Cheever's book where 2 weeks before training camp, he'd get in the car, turn the heat on, put 2 Glad garbage bags on, and drive around for 4 hours. But that seems 286 seems a little overplaying weight.
Yeah, it really is a bit surprising, a bit shocking, because, you know, we've all seen how NHL hockey players and even junior hockey players and minor league hockey players treat their bodies these days. And, really, they might take a week or two off after the season, and then they spend the rest of the summer in the gym or skating or doing whatever they need to do to be absolutely in perfect shape when they get to training camp. So when you hear that a guy is putting that many pounds on, you know, almost offensive lineman territory, it's definitely a bit disconcerting. But, you know, I think he was listed at about 245 at one time last year, but most of the players I've talked to said he never plays at that weight. Usually it's more like 260, and now they say 286, which is a bit concerning. But, you know, you have to think that maybe it's not that far above what he normally plays at.
Well, and he's a load, so, you know, if he's playing at 260, so be it. It's not like he's an ineffective, poor hockey player, right?
No, absolutely not. I mean, this is the guy who scored the most goals of any defenseman in the National Hockey League last year. He had 20 goals, and that's an incredible number coming from the back end in this day and age. And you know, he had 53 points. I think that put him in the top 5 in the league. And really, he's a star defenseman. He was an all-star. And even at 260 pounds, that didn't seem to be a problem for him. So, I think Winnipeg fans are very excited about getting a chance to see Dustin Bufflin get to play. I think whatever happened in Minneapolis, you know, nothing has been proven. Obviously, he hasn't even been officially charged yet. And the Jets are hopeful that he won't be in the incident that was boating while intoxicated. That was what he was arrested for. And I think the fans of Winnipeg are going to be pretty quick to forgive and forget if he comes to camp and plays and shows that he's going to play well this season.
Let's move to another defenseman. We haven't heard anything lately with regard to Zach Bogosian and contract and him being all happy and everything. Is that something you think gets done? Are they close? Have you heard any word?
I absolutely think it gets done. I don't know how close they are, to be honest, because they just haven't talked about it much. But anybody that we have talked to, Zach Bogosian himself, his agent, Kevin Cheveldayoff, the GM of the Jets, all agree that this is something that they expect to get done in time for training camp. So I would not be at all surprised if something was done in the next couple of weeks with training camp starting on the 17th.
And that should be, looking at the Jets roster, one of their strengths, that tremendous blue line.
Well, it really should be, but it's interesting that you say that, because if you actually look back at last year's numbers, the Thrashers were second last in the league in goals against. I think they tied with the Oilers, in fact. They were among the worst teams in the league in terms of goals against. And so really there's been so much talk about what a strength their blue line is, and I look at it on paper, it does look pretty solid. But that being said, you know, they're going to have to be a lot better than they were last year for the team to have any chance of making the playoffs.
Wow, that's interesting. In Edmonton, there's probably, I don't know how many Winnipeg Jets fans there are, but they're sure talking a lot. I imagine it's just almost to the boiling point in Winnipeg as we get towards training camp.
It's, I think the words fever pitch would be the proper terminology right now. And, you know, I have gotten the sense that all across the country, people are excited about it, and it's especially strong, obviously, here in Winnipeg. There's fans coming out every day to watch a few players skate at the Mooses, or the Moose. I call them the Moose. They're the Winnipeg Jets now, obviously, at their training facility. There's been, at most that I've seen, maybe 5 players. And yet there's lots of fans coming out just to get a glimpse of them. They can't even tell who's who. They don't have numbers on or anything, but they sure want to come and see NHL players out on the ice. And, there's just a massive amount of excitement everywhere you go. People talk about this hockey team absolutely all the time. And, you know, there's so many people that have shelled out money for tickets, and the excitement for them is that in a few weeks, they're actually going to get to see a product on the ice for all that money that they spent on those tickets. And, you know, after 15 years of not having a team, I think it's pretty understandable that this excitement is built to this point.
Looking at the roster makeup and the moves that the Jets made after the team came from Atlanta, I think it's reasonable to suggest that they're going to do it the right way. They're going to build long-term with draft picks and youth. Kane, Bogosian, we've talked about as well. Is that something the fan base can get behind, or are they going to be impatient to see a winner immediately?
You know, I wrote a column right after the free agency period because there were some fans, certainly on Twitter and on Facebook and writing on comment boards on our website and other websites, that were complaining that they weren't doing more to bulk up their team. You know, they weren't going after Brad Richards or anything like that. But I wrote a column saying, chill out, people, and let them build this team the way that they want to, and especially give them a chance to look and see what they have, because it's pretty hard for them to even know when it's a brand new management team coming in exactly what they did have coming over from Atlanta. And I think they've done it absolutely the right way, and I think most of the people, most of the fans, appreciate that. Appreciate that it's a young roster that is going to grow here in Winnipeg as the Winnipeg Jets. And I think that anybody that really takes a good hard look at that roster sees that it most likely, if it's managed correctly, has a very bright future.
Just before the draft, I talked to an individual in the media who had three different folks that he talked to who were scouts or at least around the draft. All of them mentioned Mark Scheifele as a guy who would surprise. So by draft day, I wasn't surprised when he was taken by the Jets. How have people responded, and what does he look like? I know he's a good young hockey player, and he'll be at the rookie camp here in a week or so. How have the fans responded to that? What do they think about Scheifele?
Well, you have to... I think that the fans were taken a bit off guard when he was drafted because, and this is partially the fault of we in the media, pretty much nobody mentioned him leading up to the draft. It was like, here's the top 10, and here's the guys that the Jets might get. A lot of talk about Sean Couturier and players like that. But really, nobody ever mentioned Mark Scheifele. He wasn't on anybody's draft board. And so when he was drafted, everybody went scrambling for the internet to try to find out who he was and what kind of a player he was. When you talk to people afterwards about him, they're, you know, this guy was rising. He was a rising star heading up into the draft, and we've seen that before. And players who've done that, who rise quickly, often do turn into pretty good NHL players. And I think that this guy is a person who scouts absolutely love for his size. He's got great hands. And he is getting better all the time. He's apparently had a very strong camp at the World Junior Evaluation Camp this summer, and he already says he's coming to camp trying to win a job. Well, sounds unlikely, but we all remember what happened with Jeff Skinner last year, who was also a seventh overall pick.
Yeah, and he was outstanding, and this kid is too. Now, when does the, and I apologize for not knowing this because I read it, but I can't recall, when does the jersey release happen? Is that coming up this week?
Tuesday,
okay.
Yeah, Tuesday at 11 a.m. Now, they're doing it at the military base, the Air Force base in Winnipeg, which is interesting because there has been some controversy over the militaristic look of the logo, and obviously they have no intention of distancing themselves from that in any way. The owner, Mark Chipman, who is obviously a hero in Winnipeg for what he's done, has never made any secret of his support of the military, and they're obviously going to tie themselves right to that, and it'll be very interesting to see how that's received across the country once the season starts.
I think it'll be very positive in a city like Edmonton. The military is a big deal, and it should be. And I think everything about the Jets right now is positive. Once they lose a game, things might go a little bit awry, but it's a pretty exciting time. You must be over the moon as somebody who covers media, not only to have the Blue Bombers you know, heading to Saskatchewan and their fan base ruining signs as they go, but to also have the Jets doing so well. It's got to be like a gold mine compared to, say, 3 years ago or so.
Well, even, you know, last year or 2 years ago, really, it's a completely different world. I'm the sports editor at The Sun, and I've been doing this for about 6 years, and, you know, it's never been anything like this. It's the busiest we've ever been, but it's good busy. No one would ever complain about it, because when you're a sports writer or you're in the sports business, what you want is to be writing about the best things for for guys that work at our paper and all the media in Winnipeg, they went from covering a minor league hockey team to getting a gig covering the NHL just like that without even having to leave. So, yeah, people are pretty excited about that.
Ted, thanks so much for your time and have a great weekend.
Hey, absolutely my pleasure.
Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun talking about the Jets and Dustin Byfuglien and what is going to be an amazing year for Winnipeg Jets fans, the city of Winnipeg, and the province of Manitoba. This is Nation Radio. It's 12:39. On the way, Julian from Pension Plan Puppets.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Just moving today, a couple hours ago, I guess, two-time Stanley Cup champion Jay Pandolfo has agreed to attend the New York Islanders 2011 camp on a tryout basis. There was some rumors earlier that the Devils were possibly, or he wanted to play for the Devils. Looks like he'll be in on the island this year. Pandolfo spent 14 years of his professional career with the Devils, playing in 819 career games and scoring 99 goals with the Devils and winning at least a couple of Stanley Cups, I believe. What is rookie camp next weekend in Penticton? The roster is posted on the Oilers website. Man, 2 years in a row, these are historic list. It's ridiculous. Last year was Hall, Eberle, Pajarvi. This year it's Ryan Nugent Hopkins, Marinson, Curtis Hamilton, Tyler Pitlick. These are really outstanding. Outstanding young players. Back in 79, I did a post on this on Oilers Nation this week. Mark Messier was a holdout. The Oilers had offered him two contracts, and he had said no to both. And they had also invited Kelly Kissio, and he didn't end up making the team. But interesting to look back to 1979, a long time ago, and see those names. Obviously, Mark Messier wasn't a big star at that time, but he did come out of the WHA and felt he was deserving of a bigger contract. And, you know, as you look back in NHL history, Gary Bettman, he gets a lot of flack, and he doesn't get a lot of credit. But training camp holdouts for rookies, you think about that now, and the contract writes itself. When Ryan Nugent Hopkins was drafted, by the time he got to the podium, everybody sort of knew what his contract was going to look like. And, of course, that wasn't the case back in 1979 with Mark Messier. We talked earlier and last week about Ryan Nugent Hopkins' injury. It looks like he had a setback a couple of weeks ago and something that he's looking at. I think Whitney feels like it's something to worry a little bit about, and the organization is somewhat confident based on medical reports. We'll have to wait and see once training camp begins, but there was something of a setback, and Ryan Whitney is very important to this NHL hockey team. If the Edmonton Oilers have to enter the season without Ryan Whitney, that puts their top six defense at Tom Gilbert, Ladislav Smead, Theo Pekham. You've got Sutton, who came over, Barker, and one of Petrie or Taylor Chorney. So one would hope that Ryan Whitney is going to be healthy very quickly and turn that around very soon, because it's a little bit of a concern, there's no doubt. Posted on Low Tide today the expected training camp depth chart, the incumbents. And I found it interesting because as we went through the names of all the players here and talked about who would be the starting goaltender, for instance, whether it's Dubnyk or Habibulin, and the defense group that I just listed just a minute ago with Whitney included. And then at center, it's, you know, Gagne, Sean Horkoff, Eric Bélanger. And then there's a whole group of players who may end up being that fourth line center or third line center, and it could be Ryan Nugent Hopkins, it could be Anton Lander, could be Ryan O'Meara. It depends on how the Oilers want to go. It depends on how Ryan Nugent Hopkins works out, obviously. But it looks to me as though there's a real chance that the Edmonton Oilers may be making a trade here. And I always say this every year, but Taylor Chorney is a waiver worry. If Nugent Hopkins makes the team, that gives you four centers with some guys like Lander heading back. Interesting times to be an Edmonton Oilers fan, because this fall, this team should be better, and there may be enough talent that they're going to have to offload some of the prospects we've been talking about for the last two or three years. I think we have room for it right now. It's a little bit of a lengthy interview, but it's really worthwhile. Earlier in the week, Robin Brownlee was talking on air, and Gene Principe as well, with Jason Bonsignor. And the interview got around to how Bonsignor felt after being drafted by the Edmonton Oilers and how he was treated by the organization, and specifically Glenn Sather.
You know, it's just, it's been a sensitive issue for a lot of years.
Okay.
I mean, Glenn just really never seemed to I mean, the first thing he ever said to me, one of the first things he ever said, you know, hardly even said hello, was, "I'm not going to give you $1 million."
Uh-huh.
It's like, "Oh, okay, nice to meet you too," you know. And it, you know, I mean, Ryan Smith is a great guy, awesome players, had a fabulous career, you know. But right there, you know, around draft time, I mean, his family were good friends with Glenn, and you know, his mom and dad were hugging Glenn and close to him at the draft there. And, you know, it just never really felt like he really wanted me there. And, I mean, there was, you know, he called me into the office one time and told me I was fat and overweight and that I was going to get fined, you know, if I didn't lose 10 pounds in 3 days. And, you know, it wasn't going to be $50 or $500. It was going to be $100,000 or $200,000, and I was going to have to move in with him. And, you know, just it was an abrasive way of handling things. And, you know, some people kind of later on talking to me about it sort of said it was kind of like mental abuse. And, I don't know. I'm not saying that he abused me. I'm just saying it was just,
he didn't hand you the keys to the city.
You know, later in life, you start looking back, and it's like, geez, why did I have to get treated like that? You know, I was a young kid just trying to fit in, and, you know, I didn't have the greatest work ethic the first couple of years there. I didn't understand what it took to play at that level. I mean, when you're a junior hockey star and you're playing 35 minutes a game, you don't have to worry about conditioning. It comes naturally, you know. When you have the puck half the game and you're scoring a bunch of points and you're on the power play and, you know, in control of things, you don't end up playing a lot of defensive hockey, you know, and your defensive skills aren't what they need to be to get to the pro level, you know, and there was a lot of things I needed to learn, you know, and for a stretch there, they had me going to the rink at 5:30 in the morning by myself, skating for an hour and a half or 2 hours with the strength and conditioning coach. You know, just getting skated into the ground. I mean, they'd put 300 pucks out in front of the net. I'd go out and shoot 300 pucks, go into the corner and hit the heavy bag after every puck, you know, get wind sprinted for, you know, 45 minutes straight. As a 19-year-old kid by yourself, when the and they're weighing me the second I go in there and the second I come off the ice and the second I leave the rink for practice, and I'm drinking Slim Fast to try to lose weight and to try to, you know, be where they wanted me to be. Now I'm starting to black out there when I'm getting wind sprinted, you know. And then I'd come off the ice, have to go through a full hour and a half, you know, hour-long practice with the NHL team, which is tough enough in itself at that age or at any age. And then come off the ice and, you know, not to mention doing all this stuff in front of the veterans as they're coming in and kind of feeling embarrassed about it. And, you know, then be put through a rigorous workout that most people wouldn't stand up to. I mean, I had to run every single flight of stairs around the top of the Coliseum, do 10 push-ups at the top of every level, you know, do another hour and a half of kickboxing or an hour of kickboxing after that. Then I got to go home if I was lucky for a couple hours, then had to meet the strength and conditioning coach back at the gym, you know, by myself again at 7 o'clock at night and go through another hour and a half, two-hour workout. And through the whole thing, really trying not to eat at all because, you know, they're yelling at me about weight and body fat and everything. And, I mean, it kind of got to the point at one stage where a couple of the veterans even, you know, went to the staff and said, "Look, you know, you're going to break this kid." And, I mean, honestly, at that point, I was just having absolutely no fun at all and just miserable. And, you know, I mean, then you get put into the games, you know, for 5 minutes, maybe you get 5 minutes of playing time on the fourth line, you know, and you're expected to be a scorer, and if you're not scoring and or not producing points, then they're, you know, you're a bust or they're down on you, you know, and it was just really tough. I mean, the opportunities I did get to play sparingly there, I was just so rusty and so out of game shape, you know, not physically, but just mentally and timing-wise and everything from not playing at all, that it's just really hard to shine in those circumstances, and especially when you're up against the toughest competition in the world. You know, just a lot of that stuff people, you know, just didn't understand. And you know, you hear, "Oh, you know, Jason was a rich kid, you know, who didn't have to play hockey." I mean, it's hysterical, this stuff, you know. I mean, my family is extremely middle class. My dad's still working at 63 years of age right now. And, you know, I had none of this stuff handed to me. I worked my tail off for it my whole life. And I guess part of the reason I got to where I was and was successful till that point was that I worked very hard at it. And, you know, was on the ice for hours and hours by myself as a child in our backyard rink and coming home between, you know, lunch at school and skating. And but, I mean, you do all that stuff because you love it and you're enjoying it, you know. And when it got to the point where it just wasn't any fun for me whatsoever, it's hard to be successful at it, you know. I mean, regardless of how much money you're making, you want to enjoy what you're doing. And for me, it was really never about the money. It was about, I mean, sure, that was great. And, yeah, I had a fancy car at one point, but it was about being, you know, doing something that you love and wanting to be good at it, you know. And it just, all my confidence went completely out the window, you know. It was like you go from junior hockey where you're the big star and the team looks up to you and everybody on the team looks up to you and the coach puts you in important situations and, you know, and I didn't expect any of that to be given to me right off the bat in the NHL, and I probably certainly wasn't ready for it at that point, but it's just the situations that I was used in were completely foreign to me and just, you know, really just left me lacking confidence. I mean, it was difficult, you know, especially at that age.
Jason, did your time here take the joy out of the game for you long term?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely did. And I, over the years, whenever, you know, tough situations would arise playing anywhere else, it, you know, you just all that stuff would linger, you know. It would be in your head. And, you know, no matter where I went or what I did the rest of my career, you know, no matter where I was playing, I had to hear about, you know, being a first-round flop for the Edmonton Oilers, you know, and being a first-round flop with 20 other guys that they consider to be first-round flops with the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, I don't know. It's just, how do you explain 10 or 15 or, you know, 20 guys over the years all being first-round busts or whatever with the Oilers? I mean, sure, some of those guys probably just, you know, got put in situations maybe they weren't ready for or good enough for, but it's, I mean, a lot of those guys were drafted in those slots because they had earned it to that point, you know, and I just, I don't know, I'm sure the organization is great now, and it was great then in certain respects, and I'm sure there's a different policy in place for bringing younger guys along, but for me, however they handled it back then just didn't work, you know, and that's not to say I wasn't at fault, too. I mean, I certainly, you know, there was things that I should have done differently or could have done better, but it just didn't work, you know, and that's all there was to it. And it's unfortunate, but life goes on, you know, and can't turn back the clock.
Jason, listen.
I mean, there was one time in Hamilton, I was the second leading scorer on the team as a 21-year-old, and we made it, you know, a little bit of a ways in the playoffs there, and Glenn came down to watch a game, and I had been scratched for that game or for a couple of games at that point, and one of the scouts had told my agent how well I had played the last time I was in the lineup during the playoffs there. And, you know, Glenn corners me up in the press box there and says, you know, do you know why you're not good, or why you're not playing right now? And I said, well, honestly, Mr. Sather, I really don't. You know, I don't understand what's going on. Your scouts said that I played well the last time. I was the second leading scorer on the team this year. And, you know, and he says, well, you're not good enough to play right now, you know. You're not good enough to play at this level. And I said, well, you know, I feel like I am. I mean, I had 21 goals as a rookie and, you know, played pretty well. And he says, you're not good enough, you know. And at this point, this was after years of just knowing that it wasn't going to work out, you know, 3 or 4 years of camp. And, you know, I went to camp that year, the best shape of my life. I remember Kelly Buchberger telling Dougie Waite how, because Dougie came late that year and I was living with Dougie, and how well I was doing at camp and how good a shape I was in and stuff. And, you know, they played me one exhibition game. I had a real nice assist in that game and thought I played pretty decent and got sent to the minors the next day, you know. So I kind of knew the writing was on the wall. No matter what happened at that point, for whatever reason, it just wasn't going to work out. And, you know, so then I go back to the minors there, and it's just kind of the same stuff again. And anyways, you know, at this point in the press box, I said, well, you know what, Glenn? I said, why don't you just trade me? Oh, nobody wants you, you know, nobody wants you. And at this point, my agent had told me 3 or 4 teams had made some really attractive offers for me at that point. And, you know, with some big-name players involved, which, you know, I was quite honored to hear. And Glenn tried to tell me I was lying, you know. So I just knew it was going nowhere, and he pushed me. And said, have a nice career. I thought, I mean, I was obviously pretty angry, and I thought, you know what, if I get back at him or try to have a push-and-shove contest here or take a swing at him or something, this is going to be definitely the end of my career. And I walked away. Well, then, you know, 2 days later, my agents call me, oh, Glenn wants to have a meeting with you, you know, and apologize, which was nice, and I appreciated it, but they want me to come to camp now the next fall, you know? I mean, how am I supposed to go back to camp after having all this stuff happen and feel like I'm going to get a fair chance again, or like there's, you know, like it's water under the bridge, you know?
Right.
It just didn't work out, and I'm really sorry. I feel like I let everybody in Edmonton down, and people think that I just didn't care, didn't want to play, or, you know, it's not the case, and it bothers me. I tried to block it out, and it's something that lingers on forever, you know? I wish I could go back in time and go back and play for them again and erase everybody's doubts and make everybody happy. I know it's never going to get that chance again, you know? So.
Hey, Jason, you know what? Thank you for being candid and, you know, just explaining what happened from your perspective, you know, almost a couple decades ago. We do have to go to break. I will say this, though, Jason, that would not happen now.
That, of course, was Gene Principe, along with Robin Brownlee, doing the Jason Bonsignor interview during Jason Greger's show earlier this week. And, wow, that is a fascinating piece of tape that we just played in regard to how Jason Bonsignor felt at the time, and certainly these years later. He's more, obviously a more mature individual, and I think that you know, we can make jokes about it. We can say, hey, well, we call Steve Kelly or Yanni Rita, but you know what? There's two things. I think number one, the Oilers, as Gene Principe mentioned there, I think that they are a different organization at this time. They're obviously at a similar low ebb. When Bonsignor was drafted, the Oilers drafted fourth and sixth that year. I believe Bonsignor was the Bo Mironov pick. I think he came over with Mironov, if I'm correct on that. And, you know, there's the side of that. The organization was not a winning franchise at that time, and there was a lot of pressure. They were much better a couple of years later. Ryan Smith was taken sixth overall, and he obviously had a different experience from the same hockey club. But Steve Kelly was right around that draft as well. So, that's one side of it. The Oilers were a different organization, not a winning organization at that time. But there's also a side of it. I think there are some individuals that are just not cut out for the professional hockey life. And when I was listening to that interview, I was reminded of a guy named Robin Sandler, who was drafted by the Montreal Canadiens. He's a big defenseman out of the Edmonton Oil Kings in 1975. He played, scored up like crazy, 32 goals, 93 points in 66 games, 6'3", 180. And he was drafted ninth overall by Montreal. And it went badly for him right away. He attended their 75 training camp with the Habs, decided he didn't like the experience. After just 1 week, he went back home to North Vancouver, and I'm taking this from Hockey Draft Central. He said there was too much pressure on him in pro hockey, didn't have any interest in turning pro. He'd already signed a three-year deal that included a big signing bonus, but he returned that money, and he announced his retirement for the first time in September 75. Then he spent the 75-76 season playing amateur hockey in Vancouver. He came out of retirement in 76 and played in Sweden. And then he talked to Glenn Sather. The reason I tweet with me was Glenn Sather. He signed a two-year deal with Edmonton on June 16th, 77. The deal was worth over $100,000, but he left Edmonton's training camp in September 77 after running into issues similar to those that he dealt with 2 years earlier with the Montreal Canadiens. So I think it's a fascinating interview, and you can tell that Jason Bonsignor is sincere, and there is a lot of hurt from his side, and the details are very vivid for him these years later. So it definitely had an impact on his life. But as Robin said at the time, you know, you want to hear the other side of it. And I know that Robin did contact the New York Rangers organization and gave them a link to the interview and offered the Rangers or Glenn Sather or both the opportunity to respond. And we'll see how that goes, because that was a very interesting piece of information that Jason Bonsignor passed along these many years later, and it certainly is worth pursuing. Now, we're really late. It's 1:03. I've been gabbing after the interview. Coming up in the next half hour, Corey Graham from the Edmonton Oil Kings, and we'll also talk to Rob Soria from Oil Drop. It's all on the way.
This This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 8 minutes after 1 o'clock. If you're a fan of hockey, this is a this is kind of the beginning. It's, I guess, puck drop. If you like hockey, you've got it starting tomorrow. Service Center in St. Albert as the Oil Kings hold their fifth annual preseason invitational in Service Place. And the teams are Oil Kings, Medicine Hat Tigers, Red Deer, Calgary, Swift Current, and Prince George. And that is an interesting lineup. Now, these are the young kids. You're going to see a lot of young kids. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins will not be there, but these are guys who are definitely worth watching. We talked to Cam Moon about that earlier last hour and about the good players that are going to be seeing. And you know what? It's a great price. You zip out there. You have a great time. And then, of course, a week from today, the Edmonton Oilers rookie camp starts out in Penticton. And I was looking through their last year and then this year. And I think if you put those two together and compared them with any rookie camp right through the Oilers' history, this is such a great cluster of young talent. Last year, the headliners were Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, and, of course, Magnus Pajärvi. This year, the headliners after Ryan Nugent-Hopkins are multiple. Anton Lander, Ryan Martindale, Colton Tubert, David Musil, Olivier Waugh, Tyler Bunns. It seems as though prospects are everywhere. If you're an Oiler fan, this is a great time to be a fan of prospects because they're everywhere. Speaking of prospects and fans and Edmonton and Oil Kings, at 10 after 1, it's Corey Graham on the line. How are you, Corey?
Pretty good, Al. How are you?
Good. Now, you've been, you're back. When did you get back from holidays?
I got back Sunday night, so I've been right at the rink and here all week.
Okay, and you know what? There's lots going on. The Oil Kings are doing the Amazing Race right now, is that correct?
Yeah, just about to get going with some team building this afternoon, so I think that's the plan. Yeah, absolutely.
And what part are you going to play? Anything or...
I think I just get to kind of hang out at one of the stations and just sort of be there for the fun, but... yeah, I haven't. I'm just on my way actually down to Telus Field pretty soon here, so I'll find out once I get there.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the team that you've seen so far. And as I mentioned a minute ago, it's not like everyone is there, but these are the good young players, and you've gotten to look. Who's impressed you so far that you've seen?
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, a lot of the bets coming back. You know, start with Keegan Lowe and Clark Wilson coming back. And it looks like, you know, they're different guys almost, bigger in shape. You know. Not to say they weren't in shape last time, but, I mean, you know how kids are these days. One summer of hard work, and then all of a sudden you see the benefits. I mean, Keegan's a guy that looks like he's, he looks like a man now after, you know, being a pretty decent-sized player last year. He just looks like he's taken that next step physically. And, you know, there's a lot of guys like that, of the vets returning. Martin Gernat, the Oilers draft pick, has looked really good. He looks like he just fit right in. He's an unbelievable passer, Al. He makes passes boards to boards, tape to tape, and very impressed with his game so far. And of course, of the youngsters, you can't go far without mentioning Curtis Lazar, who's lived up to the billing so far. I think he had 2 goals in the red-white game, and throwing his body around. So looking forward to seeing him in the everyday lineup.
With regard to Gernat, just reading about him, he's like 6'5 and 85 pounds. Does he look like Martin Marinson out there? Is that similar in terms of look?
You know what? I would say no. To be honest, I think Gernat, it looks like he has more size on his bottom end. For me, when I look at Marinson, he's like a toothpick on the bottom. I mean, I've never seen a guy with smaller legs and such a big guy. Gernat, to me, looks a little bit more balanced. Not to say that he's going to have a season like Marinson did last year, because that was pretty impressive for him. But he looks like he's a little bit more, maybe built for a bit of a longer haul. Because, I mean, the thing with Marinson was, I thought last year, probably about midway, three-quarters of the way through this season, he kind of really hit the wall, and that happens to young kids, especially coming over from Europe. And I'm looking to see with Gernat, he's hasn't been overly physical, but he's mixed things up. He's thrown some hits. He's taken some big hits, too, as he gets accustomed over here. And the way he's built looks a little bit more, I guess, proportioned than Marinson.
So you mentioned his passing, and he's a good defenseman away from the puck as well?
Yeah, absolutely. He's in position. He's not afraid to go up ice and join the rush. There were a couple of times during some of the scrimmages, and I kind of looked up, and I'm like, oh, wow, that's Gernat way up there. But he was able to get back. He skates really well for a big man. He doesn't look, you know, some of the big guys look awkward, especially as they grow into their body. He looks like he's a fluid skater. So I think the Oil Kings and the Oilers have a keeper in this kid because, you know, he can move the puck well. I haven't seen a ton of his shot, although he's got a pretty decent shot, but he's more of a passer so far from what I've seen, and looking forward to seeing him in some game action coming up this weekend.
I know there's a lot of excitement about Lazar. With him added to that forward group, are goals going to be a problem, or do you think this team's going to score more this year?
I think they should score more. I mean, last year coming into camp, Al, the big question was, where were the goals going to come from? And I don't think anybody pegged Dylan Ruck as having the season he had last year leading this team in scoring. And, you know, Michael St. Croix took that next step offensively. So, I mean, there's two big guys up front that are going to be back with this club that I think are going to lead the way offensively. You throw Christian Spelch into the mix, who's looked really good, another guy that's come back in shape and you know, his second year in North America, a little bit more accustomed. That guy can fly, and he's got some really sick hands as well. So I look for him to contribute offensively. I think Travis Iwanek might be able to chip in a little bit more in the offensive role. I think he might get more of an expanded offensive role this year. And then you mentioned Curtis Lazar coming in, and the records this kid has topped in his past, that he's going to be a guy that should be able to contribute offensively. So, you know, I don't know if they're going to have that one guy that dominates. I just think their depth up front can smother some teams.
And the issue, I think, going into camp would be surrounding goaltending. What have you seen so far, and who do you like?
Goaltending for me is interesting. I like Laurent Brossoit, obviously, the Calgary Flame draft pick. He's going to be, in my opinion, the guy that gets the first look to be the guy that carries the bulk of the load coming back from last year when he really improved as the season went along last year, Al. I thought he struggled early, but, you know, as the season went along, he got settled into that position a little bit more and really took the next step and got drafted last year. So I think you're going to see him, I would think, being the guy they look to early, and hopefully he can carry the load. And I mean, there's a decision to make. Make no bones about it, about the backup. Tristan Jarry is a young kid that's pushing for some time, a 16-year-old, and they have a 20-year-old in John Groenhey coming back as well, who's looked pretty good in camp as well. So I think it's going to, you know, this preseason can go a long way for Bob Green and Randy Hanch and the coaching staff to kind of make that decision as who's going to be the second goaltender on this squad, because it's a pretty good battle right now behind Brossoit.
Before we move on to the some other subjects with regard to the WHL, let's talk a little bit about Pešek if he comes back. Will that impact Gernat's position, or do you think he's going to be among the top six defensemen every night?
Oh, I think he'll be a top six guy every day in Gernat. I mean, Pešek coming back, I think it just helps this team. You know, you look at defensively, this team is probably on paper one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, if not the Western League, just because of their depth. You know, Pešek and Lowe, Griffin Reinhardt, we haven't mentioned Gernat. You throw in, obviously, Ryan Deck. Ashton Sautner's done a good job of making a case for this camp. Mason Gertsen, another young kid coming in. They got some real big depth defensively. Braden LaRocque still in the mix as well. So I really like their defensive position. I think Gernat's going to be a guy that, you know, he may not get a huge minutes early as he gets accustomed to North America, but just the skill of this guy, Al, just the way he moves the puck out of his own zone, he's gonna demand playing time.
Compared to last year, and I know it's early, and this is really an unfair question, but how far do you think this team can go? Are they built for a deep run? They've got all these guys together finally. Can they make a deep run into the playoffs?
I think that's the expectation. I think this team is, you know, competing for a top four spot in the Eastern Conference and home ice in the first round. And, you know, I think they've had a taste a couple of times now, including last year against Red Deer. And I think there's a lot of guys that kind of feel like, you know, last year they didn't prove enough. So I think there's a lot of people on this squad really kind of have their head down and ready to work for this year. And I think expectation-wise is this team should be a team that is amongst the leaders in the Eastern Conference throughout the years. And then once we get to playoffs, I mean, you know, anything can happen. But I would think this team's built, if they can stay healthy, for a pretty decent run.
Are you heading out to St. Albert for the tournament starting tomorrow?
Oh, yeah, I'll be out there all weekend long. I'm looking forward to finally seeing some different teams hit these guys.
Yeah, it's tomorrow. And the six teams are Prince George, Medicine Hat, Red Deer, Calgary, and Swift Current?
Swift Current, yeah.
Right. And the Oil Kings, they'll have the Gernats and the Pelches and all of those guys, the some of the drafted players who will be going to camp. Will they be there?
I think the plan is the drafted players will each play, or the guys going to camp, will each play one game as they leave right after this camp. So I would think, and we spoke with Bob Green about this yesterday on Jason's show when I filled in, that you're going to see a mixed lineup each night. You're going to see some vets and some rookies. There may be some guys that get into two games just to get a better look at some of these young players. They do have some of their 16-year-olds that have to go home for their their camps right after this, so they'll be leaving as well. But I think you're going to see a pretty good split. You're going to see at least one game from all the veterans.
I'm trying to get some ammunition because I'm trying to talk my wife into going to more than two games because she wants to go to see a movie or something. So this will help me. I appreciate that, Corey. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Cam Moon was on with us last hour, and he was saying, look, you know what? It's going to be a training camp thing with the Edmonton Oilers. This is a guy who may end up going back after nine games. That's likely the time where they'll make the decision. A year ago, almost right now, Taylor Hall was in the same position. Can you talk to me a little about Taylor Hall being a little older and a little physically stronger compared to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? Is that how you see it?
Yeah, and I also think the Oilers a year ago, they had more spots, right? I think there was no doubt in anybody's mind that Taylor Hall was going to make this team just because of what they were lacking up front. And, you know, now you add the what they have, their signings plus the rookies that made this team last year, and some of their picks last year as well that might be knocking on the door. So, you know, I agree with Moon that it's going to be a camp for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. You know, there's no pressure for him to make the team, right? There's nothing that says this kid has to play. If he comes in and plays camp and looks like he belongs, though, I think that's a good thing for the Oilers because that gives them some options up front. You know, can you carry Nugent-Hopkins and Gagné? You know, if you have Horkoff and Boulanger there as well, can you move somebody to the wing to give Nugent-Hopkins enough time? Is there enough ice time for him to play here? So I think it'll be good for him to come to camp. But you know, you look at Taylor Hall last year, and just like you said, he's a bigger player. He was a bit older than Nugent-Hopkins is right now. So I think, you know, there was more space, and he was almost a better fit. Now that's not to say he's going to be the better player long term. But, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Nugent-Hopkins. I just think it's going to really rely on what he does here at camp and how this team kind of break camp. And I don't think you can keep him off if he earns a spot, but I guarantee you they're not giving him a spot.
That's a really good point you make. I asked Cam Moon, he called his 1,000th WHL game last year. This is what, year four for you or three?
Actually, with the WHL, this would be year one for me. I was doing the Golden Bears last couple of years.
Okay.
So, yeah, no worries. So I got a ways to go to catch Cam, that's for sure.
Now, but I wanted to ask you, the bus rides and all that stuff, that's something you enjoy, that camaraderie? Is that something you really get into and enjoy?
Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love being on the road. And it's amazing how much you see kind of behind the scenes when you're around a team. And you know, I was talking with Jason Strudwick about how teams kind of, you know, teams go through losing streaks and winning streaks and how things go. And, you know, we talk about it, but you don't really experience it unless you're there. And, I mean, early last year, the Kings went through a tough stretch where they lost, I want to say it was nine in a row at one point. And, man, you just see how that affects guys long-term and you know, how it is to break out of that. And yeah, I mean, just being with a group of guys and the trainers and the coaches and having that sort of access to sit down with the coaches kind of whenever you want to talk about certain things. And I absolutely love it. I love being around the different cities in the Western League and getting a chance to get out and meet some of the different people in my position and, you know, getting a chance to see all the young players come draft time that you're going to hear their names.
I got an email question from Nation Radio at team1260.com. This comes from Brian. Are you related to Dirk Graham?
I am, yeah.
That was a shot in the dark. He must know you. I don't know. So,
yeah, he must.
Cousin or something like that?
You know, he's my dad's cousin. He might say, we're not very close or nothing like that. I've met him a few times, but yeah, I'm a distant relative. I think the hockey skill in our family stopped there, I think.
Well, he was pretty gritty. I know that's continued. So there you go. Hey, Corey, thanks so much for your time.
Anytime, Alan.
All right. Corey Graham from Edmonton Sports Night Live and, of course, Oil Kings play-by-play. And you know what? Does a great job. Really professional guy. And unlike Dustin Nielsen, who never updates his Twitter, you can always count on our friend Corey to update his. This is Nation Radio on Team 1260. We're talking Oil Drop next.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It is 1:26, and had an email question with regard to the preseason invitational presented by Elite Sportswear for the Oil Kings. So just to let you know, it's the fifth annual, and it goes on Sunday and Monday. So tomorrow, Monday, at Service Place in St. Albert, and the teams we mentioned earlier, Prince George, Red Deer, Calgary, Medicine Hat, Swift Current, Edmonton. The tickets are $10 and available at the Performance Arena doors. So you want to check it out. The game times tomorrow at 11 o'clock in the morning. Prince George plays Red Deer, and then Calgary plays Medicine Hat at 3. Swift Current and the Oil Kings at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. And then on Monday at 11 in the morning, Prince George and Calgary at 3. It's Red Deer and Swift Current. And then at 7 o'clock, Medicine Hat versus the Edmonton Oil Kings. So hockey, I love it. Puck drop next weekend. We'll all be talking about what's happening in Penticton, and it begins another season of Edmonton Oiler and NHL hockey and WHL hockey, and lots to talk about. Joined now by a gentleman named Rob. How do you pronounce your last name?
Saria.
Rob Saria, you have a new blog called Oil Drop, and one of the things that we've done on Nation Radio over the last 28 shows or so is highlight some of the really good blogs out there. Most of them have been established for many years. Yours is like 2 months old, and it's a beautiful site. You have some very good insights. I like it because you seem to agree with me a lot, so that's one of the reasons that I go there every day. It's a great new blog. It looks good. Tell me why you started it and what people can expect when they get there.
Honestly, it was just something that I just out of the blue decided to do one day. I've always been on your site, the Hockey Futures Board, to try and call the radio shows as much as possible. But with work and everything else, at times I don't get to hit it all. So I thought, well, why not put my opinion out there as well? And it's always something that I'd wanted to do. And I love the game since I was a little kid. I loved the Oilers since I was a kid, and I still do. And as far as the site itself goes, you're going to come over there and you're going to get my opinion on what I feel, you know, what I see is going on, right or wrong. I won't hold any punches. If I like what I see, you know, I'll put it out there and see what people, you know, what people think.
What's your background? Are you an Edmonton boy? Did you grow up playing hockey in the system, or did you come from parts other than Edmonton?
No, I actually never did play hockey, like, at a, you know, any structured level outside of playing my whole life, you know, be it on ice or street or whatever the case may be, right? I was born here. I've lived my whole life here. I love sports in general. I coach a soccer team right now. That's where I am right now in Calgary, coaching provincials team. I just love sports in general, and the Oilers are my true first passion, basically.
So. I played hockey right up until skating backwards became an issue, and then I was pretty much out of it. So I think we probably got out of the game about the same time.
Yeah.
I noticed you paid on your blog, you pay special attention to special teams, PK and power play. Do you think the Oilers will be better this season, and what do you think fans should look for as being different than a year ago?
Well, PK-wise, they should be. It starts with your goaltending, in my opinion. Everyone knows Javi Bulin wasn't good enough last year. I personally think Dubnyk wasn't great shorthanded either. It's an issue this team's had for a while in between the pipes, not to lay it just on the goalies. The defense in general, they're a little soft. That silly diamond formation they played last year, which I know I've heard you talk about and others, it made no sense with the, you know, the people they had. It should be better now if Whitney stays healthy. Having Peckham a year older, having Barker added into the swing of things, I think Barker is going to be a great signing. I expect him to take that step, and I think he'll help on the PK. He'll help more on the power play, but he'll get out there on the PK. Schmid, another year older. The biggest thing up front, obviously, is adding Bélanger. To lay everything on Sean Horkoff's feet is a little much, I'd say. Horkoff's a good player, has to do way too much too often. And as far as the power play goes, it's up to Hemsky. I think most of us would agree on that. If he sits on the half board and decides to do nothing with the puck, at some point they have to go to him. And if they have to move him off the first unit and put Omark there, whatever the case may be, there's enough tools on that team now that there's no reason for the Oilers power play not to be in the upper half of the league at the absolute worst.
With the power play, do you see Ryan Smith being a part of the first power play along with, say, Hemsky and Hall and then the two blue liners, or how do you see it breaking out?
That's what I'm guessing, because you think possibly Gagner on there, but I agree. I think Schmidty has to be part of the first unit. He's clearly that presence on the front that this team hasn't had for quite some time. Penner wasn't bad at it. But having him at the, in front of the net and being able to battle for the puck in the corners would be a huge thing. And, yeah, I'd say Hemsky and Hall. If those two aren't out there, then the staff needs to give their head a bit of a shake. You start with that, see how it goes. The one thing I don't want to see is Horkoff anywhere on the power play? Nothing against him. He's just not a power play guy. Yeah. Outside of possibly winning a faceoff and then a quick switch, right?
Well, for fans, I think the problem with Horkoff is he kept getting those one-timer opportunities and not either hitting the net or going off the toe of the blade. I mean, God knows I'd do worse than that, so I'm not complaining. But I think Taylor Hall is more of a shooter, right? He's more the great thing about Taylor Hall, we're going to get into Taylor Hall in a minute, but he's a guy who there was a game last year, I think it was the St. Louis game here in early December, where he came in over the line on the power play. He had just a little room, and he ripped a wrist shot, and the goalie never reacted. He missed the net, but he has a wicked wrister, and once they find a way to showcase him and get him in the power play zone where he's high slot or wherever he's going to be, that power play should be a lot better, right?
Well, I totally agree. The guy has an absolute beam, a laser beam of a shot. Eberle's very much like that as well, and the thing the two of those kids have is they can flat-out finish. And that's why I really hope that Hemsky gets that opportunity to play with Hall this year, develop chemistry 5-on-5 and on the power play. And whether Hemsky ends up staying long-term or not, I think is beside the point. If they have a great year and Hemsky proves what he can play like with elite players, if they end up moving him, they move him. And they end up getting more for Hemsky back in that case. And Taylor Hall takes that next step in his development. I honestly, if the kid doesn't come close to 40 goals this year, I'd be stunned. Like, he's that special player. He's that horse, as I like to say, that any good franchise needs. Is he going to be a Sidney Crosby? No, but he could be a Jonathan Toews, you know, where you're an elite player and you have that ability to take your team on your back and carry them when need be.
You have Taylor Hall on your blog, and we should mention that we're talking to Rob from Oil Drop. You have Taylor Hall with Sam Gagné and Aleš Hemský. I like that line as the top line because Hemský and Gagné have played well together at times, even though they're more past first. Hall is the addition who can absolutely shoot the puck, but he also likes to carry it, too. Do you think it might be an issue with who's going to carry the puck into the zone and start to set up the play, or are they going to be able to find the chemistry?
That's what I think they have to work on, right? Because you're right, Hemsky loves to lug the puck, as does Hall. I think it has to be a bit of give and take both ways. Hemsky's got to learn to move that puck a little quicker. And Hall, because playing with a guy like Hemsky and Gagné, like you said as well, because he's pass-first-minded as well, he can make a quick pass and get in a lane. And if those two other guys can get him the puck, the one thing with Hall, he reminds me in very many ways. You hear people comparison with Messier and this and that to a degree. The way he attacks the net reminds me of Glenn Anderson.
Yeah, he very much does that.
Like, he attacks the net, and there's no fear, there's no nothing. And he did that probably within, what, I'd say the 7-8 game mark he started doing it last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that's a big thing. If they can learn how to do that between the two of them, between Hemsky and Hall, being able to go through that neutral zone and feed each other back and forth while attacking the zone, that trio, while they could be a little challenged in their own end, if they have the puck, they're not going to be challenged in their own end.
Okay, let's check down from the top line. I'll call Tom Rennie after I get off the air and tell him that we've decided it's Hall with Hemsky and Gagné. Now let's check down to line number two. There's still the great thing about this team up front is there's still a lot of options. We have Horkoff, Belanger, maybe Nugent Hopkins at center, and then the wingers. Eberle is still there. Smith's there. The two Swedes. Who do you see lining up on the second line, or at least the second most important line on the team?
Well, I thoroughly expect Nugent Hopkins to make the team and to have an impact. I think at times he'll have his ice time reduced in certain games. You have Horkoff and Belanger who can take up extra minutes. But I think Nugent Hopkins paired up with Smith and Eberle make the most sense. It's a good combination. I think Nugent Hopkins and Eberle could click instantly. They seem to think the game very similarly. Eberle, like we said earlier, the guy is flat out as a stud when it comes to finishing. And I think Smith would be the perfect addition to that line from the standpoint of the veteran presence. He'll help the two younger guys battle in the corners. He can obviously help in the faceoff circle when need be. He's not great at it, but he's okay at it. He's serviceable in a pinch. And I just think overall it would be a good line. Smith's become over the years, even before he left Edmonton, he's defensively responsible. Again, not great, but Eberle's, I thought, improved as the season progressed in his own end. So To me, that makes the most sense. If you're going to use Smith, you could use him in a third line role. And I know some people go on about the Horkoff, Hemsky, Smith thing. To me, that was never a true first line anyway. It was here, but it's not a first line. You know, three very good players that make up a good second line on most teams back in the heyday. So I don't really want that put together. So the idea of having Smith's intelligence, experience, and grit added to Eberle and Nugent Hopkins, I think would make the most sense.
And so now we move to the third line, and we have the two Swedes on the wings and the choice of Horkoff or Boulanger at center. Which one do you choose?
I'd go Horkoff. I think Boulanger could very well be the most, well, possibly the most important addition to this team, but I'd still go with Horkoff. Horkoff did a world of good for Eberle and Hall last year. People don't like to give him the credit for that. He's very responsible defensively. He keeps them in line, and I think that'll work perfect with the two Swedes. Jarvi's pretty responsible on his own end, and while Omark isn't great at it, his game progressed quite a bit over the year, I thought. You know, and I think having Horkoff hounding him a little bit on the ice might not be a bad thing. Keep Omark more focused. You know, I think Horkoff in this role, with the ability to help out on the second line, is just what he needs to get his career back on track. And he's best suited for it. To say he's a third-line center, I think he's about a 2A, 2B sort of center. But on this team, a third-line center helping out and bringing the Swedes along, I think is best-case scenario for everyone. And like I said, he'll get that help on the PK. I think Horkoff, be it a 40 or 50-point year, which I think he could pull off, is around a 40. I think it would be 40-point year, but doing a ton of other things. You know, he's a very useful player that people like to shoot down because he makes $5.5 million. It's not his fault he signed that contract.
No, I agree. And the difficult thing, I love Sam Gagné as a player. I think he's a brilliant, you know, cerebral player, but he was ill suited to the two Swedes for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think Omark is like he's a little like Hemsky because he's so creative. You're never really sure where he is. And Pajarvi seemed to have some chemistry with him, but Gagné never did. With Horkoff, it may not matter. He just has to, you know, take care of closing the door and going down deep and identifying the guy that he has to grab and play defense for. And for a guy like Horkoff, he's been doing it for years. I think it matches up very well for that line.
Yeah, it simplifies it a lot for Horkoff because what's been asked of him the last X amount of years, it's unrealistic, especially once injuries come into it. It's unrealistic to start off with. But once you start looking at the injuries and at some years when the horses just weren't there, it's way too much to ask of the guy, right? And moving down, like, in a year's time or 2 years' time, depending how long it takes, like an Anton Lander to clearly take a third-line role, you know, Lander with either one of the two Swedes or Hartikainen, I think, would make a pretty scary-looking third line in a couple of years' time.
Okay, we're with Rob from Oil Drop, a new blog from about, I guess, mid-July that he started, and some great stuff there. We're going to let you go in about 3 minutes, but I want to throw some quick defensive pairing questions to you. If Whitney's healthy, who do you play him with?
I say Barker. I said Barker from the moment they got Barker. I know people want to do the Gilbert thing, and I see that to a degree. But Gilbert and Smead, honestly, I didn't think were bad last year at the end of the year. It's just they played way too much because of injuries and in poor situations. From what I've seen from Whitney, if he can stay healthy, whoever plays with him, the game comes up. And I think that's exactly what Barker needs. Barker wasn't exactly put in a good situation in Minnesota, mostly because of his own doing and his poor play. But I think if he simplifies his play, playing with Whitney, he's pretty solid in his own end for the most part, moves the puck like no one else on this team out of the back end. Barker, what was it, 3 years ago that he had 29 points in Chicago on the power play on a 40-point season? That's, you know, you can say what you want about the horses in Chicago. He obviously knows what he's doing on a power play. And Edmonton's very much in the same situation as Chicago would have been a few years ago, where you got young star-like players in the making. So he might be just what the doctor ordered on the power play and 5-on-5. Hey, if he can play 20 minutes a night, why not do it?
Yeah.
It just You know, I know some people are against it. I don't see it happen. I've heard people saying play him on the third pairing.
No,
it doesn't make any sense.
No, they've signed him to big money. He's going to be playing in the top four, I think. So that now exactly. you check down to Smead and Gilbert next, I would think?
Yeah, oh, for sure. Again, the pairing I thought got better. Again, when they're playing 25 minutes a night, I don't think so. But as that second pairing, if Gilbert could simplify his game, he blocks a ton of shots. You don't notice it at times, but he blocks a ton of shots. His positional play is a little better. He's still not physical enough, but that's not his game.
Yeah.
You know, and Schmid's the opposite. If he rails it back a little, he's a lot more effective. The only thing Schmid has to worry about is not getting killed in the corner again.
Or running into ice or anything, or Sean Avery.
Hey, exactly.
Rob, thanks so much. I appreciate it. And you have a great time at the soccer tournament.
You bet. Thank you so much. Anytime you guys want me on there, just let me know. It was great.
All right. That's Rob from Oil Drop. You want to check it out. It's on the Low Tide blog on the scroll if you want to go down under Oil Drop New. And interesting guy and some really good insight. Julian from Pension Plan Puppets on the way.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Nation Radio. Well, you can email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. Plus, we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. Joined from Pension Plan Puppets, one of the best blogs available on the planet, is Julian. How are you, man?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Are you in Toronto?
I'm actually in London this weekend.
Oh, okay. All right. The reason I emailed you and the reason I wanted to talk to somebody from Toronto is with regard to the Wade Belak story, there's so much news and information that's still coming available. I know PJ Stock mentioned a few things today that were news. So what I wanted to do, as opposed to adding to the confusion and talking about things that maybe we should wait a week or so to talk about, let's talk about Wade Belak as a hockey player, as a Toronto Maple Leaf, and the impact that he had on the team and the community and the fan base. Let's start with Belak as a player and as a Toronto Maple Leaf. He was a fan favorite.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think when he started out with the Leafs, he was kind of one of those in between defenders and forwards. Quinn never really had him in one spot and kind of left fans scratching their heads. But I think the thing that really turned fans towards Belak was the first game against the Devils after Jansen had laid a pretty dirty hit on Caberle. First shift out on the ice with Jansen, he bellowed out as soon as he saw Jansen. He just yelled, "Jansen!" and then went out and beat him to a pulp. And that really... For me, at least, that really cemented appreciating what Belak did for the Leafs. And from then after, Leafs TV started doing a lot of segments with him, like the Wait a Minute. And you could see a lot of his personality. He was a really funny, self-deprecating guy. And that's kind of a lot of what people have been remembering the last couple of days.
I was impressed by the number of his former teammates who took great pains immediately after to tell us about him, that he was a tension breaker in the locker room, to the point where even in great sadness, people were laughing or smiling about events that had happened in the past. It really had an impact on the hockey community and definitely on Leaf Nation because he was such a special guy.
Yeah, like there's always some show of how people felt, but it was... I think the really impressive thing was it wasn't just guys that had played with him. It was guys that knew him from the off season or knew him from junior. It wasn't necessarily just guys that played with him in the league, but everyone had their story of their favorite story of Belak, something he did to, poke fun at himself or keep the room loose.
In your article on the on Pension Plan Puppets on the, I guess it was on the Leafs Nation. Now that I think about it, you talk about his last career goal. Take me through that experience as a fan.
Well, that was kind of when Belak was in the stage with Leaf fans where he was always, no matter what was going on, he knew he was going to be a grinder. He was always going to give you his best effort. And there's two videos on that post. The first one is one of Chris Newbery's goals against the Bruins where, Belak's fighting for position in front of the net and, gets flipped over, loses his bucket, goes to the boards, holds on to the puck, fights off two Bruins, kicks it over to Newbury, and Newbury scores. So by the time that game against Nashville, it was kind of a shootout, and it was the same deal. You know, another shift where he'd been putting in a pretty yeoman's effort, and the puck just kicked out to him. He tapped it in, and he was so happy. Like, he just stood in front of the net, big grin on his face, looking like he just scored a game-winning goal. And I remember the crowd after started chanting, and he said, you remember that too, they were chanting Bielak for a couple minutes after that. And it was just good to see a guy that, you know, always gave, you know, every last ounce of effort, get rewarded with a goal.
I also love the trade deadline video where he said, I blame Mats.
Yeah.
That was great. It was great.
Yeah, they had to move the second best player.
You know what, Julian, we're a little bit short on time today, and I do thank you for calling in, but I reserve the right to call you back about Wade Bielak, and as we get closer to the regular season, I want to talk about the Leafs and what fans can expect, because as you may know, there are thousands of Toronto Maple Leaf fans in Edmonton and area, so if it's okay with you, we'll get the inside scoop from you this fall.
Absolutely. I'd love to speak to the this fora.
All right, Julian, thanks so much.
Thanks again, Alan.
Okay, that's Julian from Pension Plan Puppets, and also writes for the Leafs Nation, which is part of the Nation group of blogs, and of course the reason that we're here on Oilers Nation every Saturday between noon and 2. We've got a couple, probably a minute or so here, and I did want to talk about, if you want to hear something on Nation Radio, you can email us at nationradio@team1260.com, and also tune into, we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio as well. I want to thank our guest, Julian, who we just had from Pension Plan Puppets. Also, Cam Moon from the Red Deer Rebels. Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun told us a little bit about what's going on there. Wow, what a summer and fall in Winnipeg. And we heard from Corey Graham, play-by-play man for the Edmonton Oil Kings. And Rob Soria, great, great blog called Oil Drop. You want to check it out. And thanks again to Robin Brownlee and Gene Principe and Jason Greger for the tape that was that great Jason Bonsignor interview. I have a feeling we're going to hear about that more and more as time goes on. This is Nation Radio. We're here every Saturday between noon and 2. Have a great long weekend, everyone. Enjoy the sunshine and puck drop tomorrow at St. Albert Service Center.